Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, June 24th, 2018. This is episode 1,500. Wow. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LastPass. Secure every password-protected entry point to your business with LastPass. Join the over 33,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today at lastpass.com/twit. And by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Go to texture.com/twit to start your free trial today. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers. Computers. You know, how long before computers sounds like kind of an old-fashioned word? Time to talk abacuses, calculators, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. You know, really anything with a chip in it. And nowadays, when you're talking about computers, you're talking about probably not talking about a mainframe computer. They still exist, those big old computers, you know, that take up the size of a room, that banks still use them, still somewhat, still used around the world. Nor really are we these days talking about the desktop behemoths, the towers, although more than a few of us still have towers lurking here and there. Maybe we're talking about laptops or tablets, but the most prevalent computer, by, I think it's almost an order of magnitude, an extra zero, is the smartphone. Apple claims to have 1 billion active iPhones or iOS devices, mostly iPhones, 1 billion, and that's just Apple. There's probably 3 billion or 4 billion out there. It's a huge number, and they're ubiquitous in the sense that they're always in your pocket. They're wherever you are. Nowadays, you can't go to a restaurant without seeing a family sitting around the table all staring at their little 5-inch screens. They're not talking to each other. They're looking at. What's strange is we're still talking, but we're just not talking to each other. We're talking to, you know, our friends on Snapchat or looking at pictures on Instagram or seeing what Aunt Myrtle's up to on Facebook. It's as if the people who aren't with us are more important than the people who are with us. Strange. It's a strange phenomenon. And I think it has something to do with the fact that the people we're with, you know, aren't quite as vivid and colorful as the images on the screen, are they? They're not quite as stimulating. They're not quite as attractive and engaging. And that's not an accident. That's actually exactly how it is designed on these phones. It's designed to grab our little monkey minds, to look and feel, and it would smell and taste, if it could, like something incredibly fascinating because, well, of computers. It does go back to computers because the people who design Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and, well, really, I could stop at Facebook. The people who designed these tools, they're not evil. They're not bad people, but they understand that their business, their job is to get us to spend more time, more screen time. They call it engagement, attention on their stuff, their product. They're designed to maximize that. And that turns out to be a fairly easy thing to do. Often in technology, the thing that is easiest to do is most likely to get done. One of the reasons in computer games, for instance, that we shoot things, that it's all about shooting things, is because in the earliest hardware, which had very, you know, significant limitations in terms of amount of memory and processor speed and all that, one thing they could do very well is something called collision detection, one thing hitting another. They had that built into hardware in the early Commodores and Ataris. That was an easy thing to do. didn't take up a lot of memory or programming time, so programmers did it. In fact, you may remember the earliest computer games. Pong, right? A paddle and a ball, the ball striking the paddle. Bunk, 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 bunk. That was an easy thing to do. Then there was Breakout. And as the time went by, it turned out, hey, you know what? You could also use this to shoot things. And then Duck Hunt, and then Doom and Quake. And those turned out to be horrifically successful. The initial feedback loop, though, to this was e-commerce, was the market. Oh, we sold a lot of that. Let's do more of those. But that's slow. That takes time. You wait a year later, you go, oh, we should make that movie again. It turned out pretty well. In a way, that kind of taking time was a good thing because it slowed down. It's taken, over time, we've gotten better at making engaging games, engaging movies and books and TV shows because we've got that feedback loop, but it's slow. It was a slow loop. It took us, a decade or two or three to figure out that what really people wanted to watch was a bunch of people fighting and falling in love in a house, which I think is like all TV shows. It took us a while to, they tried it with I Love Lucy. It worked. And then the Honeymooners, that worked. Hey, maybe. But that feedback loop is a lot faster now, right? Facebook knows exactly how much time you spend on Facebook and, more importantly, what you look at and how much time you spend looking at each article. So it's an easy thing to do. And again, remember, computers, we tend to do the things that are easiest first. Easy thing to do to measure that and then optimize for it. That's a word computer scientists love. We're going to optimize for this. That means we're going to do what we need to do to make that engagement time that longer, that amount of time you spend looking at it longer. And that means they don't really need to guess, really, what's attractive. They just do something, and this is another thing that the modern computer scientist loves. It's something called A-B testing. And it's being done to us all the time. You don't know it. In the first early examples of A-B testing were a magazine that would try two different covers, or three or four, and see which one sells the best. Again, takes a while. You got to wait, got to get the sales figures. Okay, they like that picture better than that picture. We should put more of that picture on our covers. Well, now, it's instantaneous. The data gathering is multidimensional. They know all sorts of stuff. They don't know where your eyes are yet, although they do eye tracking studies, but they can't tell that about everybody. But they can certainly tell where your mouse is, where your finger is, where you touch, and they can optimize for that. And they do A-B testing. Does this, in fact, we learned in interviews with political campaigns, particularly with the Trump campaign, that they would try different colors on the ads to see which ones got the best response. And in terms of response, it's easy to measure. How long do you spend on that page? Whether you shared it, whether you liked it. You know, we're complicit in this because we love clicking the like button, right? The thumbs up button, sharing it with friends. we're giving them all the information they need to say, they like purple. It's often said that Facebook is blue. That's its predominant color because Mark Zuckerberg is colorblind. But don't kid yourself. Mark doesn't need to know what color Facebook is. He doesn't even, from his point of view, it's probably #CCF302. That's a color in web jargon. Because he's tried CCF301, and that didn't work as well as 02, but 03 was maybe a little bit better, and they keep doing it until they get just the right color to keep your eyeballs on that, glued on that page as long as possible. So that feedback loop is instantaneous, can be modified rapidly, easily, and in an ongoing way to make it more and more attractive. So it's really no accident. It's not our fault that we spend this much time looking at the screen instead of those boring people like your family sitting across from you at the table, because the screen is a vast psychological experiment. On every minute of the time you're using it, it's an experiment on you to see our monkey minds is most interested in, and then optimizing for that, because after all, that's profit, and profit is good. So I wish I could do that in radio. We don't have that feedback loop. Magazines, books, TV shows. The feedback loop is slower. It's pretty fast now on TV because they've got people meters and stuff. But it's still slower than Facebook. It's easy, instantaneous, and constant. And after now 10 years of doing that, boom, 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 boom. They really know how to get you. They know what you want. 8888-ASK-LEO. It's good for us to be aware of it. If we're going to be guinea pigs, it's good for us to know. I mean, doesn't mean we're not guinea pigs anymore, but it's good for you to know. And maybe you could, consider that and maybe try to break the loop, the cycle somehow. Our show, we're going to take calls in just a second. Did I mention 8888? I didn't. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. So give us a ring. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, still toll free if you use Skype out or something like that. There is a website where everything we talk about will be registered, noted by James DeRuvo. He's scribbling right now. That's techguylabs.com. That's all you need to remember. Tech Guy, that's me. I'm the Tech Guy. Labs, that's where I do my experiments, .com. That's free. There's no sign up and everything's there, so you don't have to write anything down. You don't have to shout at me either. You can leave your comments there as well. 8888-ASK-LEO. We'll go to the phones in just a second. Awesome. Kim Schaffer is here for our 1,500th show. Hello, Kim.
1,500 shows, 4,500 hours.
Yeah. According to Malcolm Gladwell, who says you need 10,000 hours of practice to be an expert, I'm halfway there.
You're almost an expert. And just another 14
well,
and a half years.
I have been doing this before. I did do this before I did this show. So really, this is, I don't know. It'd be interesting to count up how many radio shows I've done since I started. And do you want to know when I started? Before you were born. 1976.
A couple years.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just a couple.
Yeah. I've been doing this longer than you've been alive. Is that crazy?
It's crazy.
I still feel like I'm your age. I feel like I'm 20.
Yeah, I feel like I'm 20.
Who doesn't? We all do, right? We all do. Yeah. So Kim Schaffer is here. She's answering the phones and getting you on the air, preparing you for your appearance on show 1500. You don't have to wear black tie, but it would help. A gown.
Champagne.
A candelabra.
Yeah.
A monocle.
Well, you have one of those.
I do. I have a top hat and monocle. I should be wearing that.
You should don it, yes. Put it on for the next break.
I'll save it for 2000.
Okay.
Who should I start with?
How about John in Encinitas? I guess his Windows 10 is showing that it's up to date, but he claims it's actually not.
It's not up to date.
Not up to date.
Oh, my. Thank you, Kim.
Hello, Leo.
Hi, John.
Hi, I'll get right to the point. I'm concerned that people are thinking that their Windows 10 PC is current on its updates when that might not really be the case.
Tell me what's happening.
Okay. What's happening is that after several hours of trying to install the 1803 update, you see a fleeting message about returning to a previous restore point.
Right.
And when you check update Windows, you see a misleading green check mark and text that you're up to date. But then when you check the update history, you see that, in fact, you're in a previous update. You know, it kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you're familiar with it, the Star Trek Next Generation episode where the crew was trapped in a causality loop. You remember that?
Part of this is Microsoft's fault in not being clearer about what it means by an update. So it is actually, believe it or not, this will make sense. But you have to understand what 1803 is versus what Microsoft's talking about with that green checkbox. 1803 is what Microsoft calls a feature update. The last one was 1709. In fact, if you can kind of figure out what they mean because the first two digits are the year, 18,
right,
and the last two digits are the month, 03. They didn't get it out till 05, but they didn't rename it. So 1803 is the spring update, and it's a feature update. When you get a big number like that, that's a feature. And this is confusing because in the old days, it would be Windows 95 System Pack 3 or it would be Windows 3.11. There would be a clear indication of a feature update. And this time, because Windows 10 is the final version of Windows ever, according to Microsoft, you're not going to get those anymore. You're just going to get these two or three times a year feature updates. You are up to date. Your green checkbox mark means you're up to date with the thing that matters, which is critical system updates. Think of it as security patches.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's not that you're insecure or that you're at risk. It means, and you're seeing this, There's something about your computer that, and you should, by the way, thank your lucky stars. There's something about your computer that is, that Microsoft has said, man, we better, it's not working. We're going to roll it back. And that's good. We've seen 1803 was pushed out by Microsoft. More than half of Windows users already have it. And if you don't have it yet, you will get it this week. And they pushed it out way too fast. Microsoft says there's nothing wrong, but everybody else says, no, there's something wrong. Lots of people are having problems with 1803. So I wouldn't be in a hurry. And the fact that your machine spit it back out means, you know, there is something that you don't want. And that's fine because you are, because that green check mark is what matters. That means you're secure. You're up to date with critical updates. You're just not up to date with feature updates. And there's really not much in 1803 you're missing. There's the new timeline feature, which is useful, but not critical, I guess.
Well, I listen to Steve Gibson, fascinating every week, and he mentioned how critical the 1806 updates are, and I don't see any indication that those have been installed.
No, don't. Okay, so first of all, remember, Steve just stopped using Windows XP. So with all, and he refuses to use Windows 10. So with all due respect, he doesn't really know what's going on with Windows 10. There was a big Patch Tuesday update, the second Tuesday of every month. They do a big update. Right. You have a green check mark. You have all the ones you need. You're good.
Even though that doesn't show up in the history.
Yeah, what you don't have is 1803. That's not important. The green check mark means you're up to date with critical updates. And you can do, you know, rerun updates and see if you want.
Or try it many times.
Yeah. I think that you should just be actually thrilled that your machine went, it spit it back up. It regurgitated 1803 because something didn't work. Now, if you really want to get 1803, I would wait. I would just say, you know, every once in a while, I'll try to update and see what happens. And if it does, good. But if you have that green check mark, you have the security patches.
Okay.
And that's all you need to worry about. What you're missing is timeline is the biggest feature update. There's some other under the hood feature updates. Nothing that puts you at risk if you don't have it. And you know, it is confusing because you hear me say this. The most important thing you can do to stay safe, keep Windows updated, keep your browsers updated, anything that goes online, keep it updated. In fact, all your software should always be regularly updated. So you're saying, well, I'm not getting updated. You are. You're fine. What you're not getting is the shiny new. In the old days, they might have called it a service pack. It's a feature up. But see, even that's not fair because service packs did do major security upgrades. 1803 is not about security upgrades. It is a feature update. And timeline is nice. Lets you go kind of look back in time at things you've done, documents you've opened, and so forth. But far from vital. In fact, a lot of people just don't even know it's there. Be happy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't think 1803 will blow your ship up, although a lot of people have complained about this update to Windows. And, you know, Microsoft does something that I really applaud. I commend. They do big public beta testing. Apple's doing it now, too, because it's such a good idea, where they say, look, if you want to get the latest version, the new version of Windows before everybody else does, Microsoft says, join the Insider Ring. You can be a Windows Insider. And you can see it. Now, I think Microsoft needs to do a little bit of a better job explaining what the responsibilities of an insider are. Historically, bug testing, sometimes they call it beta testing because the beta version of a product is a pre-release version. Historically, if you're a bug tester, a beta tester of software, you actually have a job. It's not just, oh, cool, I get to see the new stuff before anybody else does. And that's kind of what the Insider program implies. Really, as a beta tester, your responsibility is to try to find bugs because there are bugs, there are problems. And your job is to not only figure them out or to make them surface, but to keep a careful record of what caused it and then, most importantly, report it. Apple does the same thing. They actually, when you install a public beta of the new operating system, whether it's iOS or macOS, they install a feedback program, and they put an icon right there on the desktop for the feedback program to remind you that part of your job as a pre-release tester is to not only find bugs, but to report them. And I'm feeling like even though Microsoft literally has millions of people pre-release testing these versions of Windows, they're not getting the information back they need. Very famously, a couple of updates ago, the Windows update they pushed out, you know, one of the big feature updates, broke the camera on many computers, including Microsoft's own. You know, the video cameras built in that made them not work. And then it if you had a Kindle and you plugged it into your Windows machine, it crashed the whole machine just by plugging it in. Those two things, at least the camera thing, should have been found and reported, and Microsoft should have known about it before they shipped it. Somehow they didn't. Last couple of updates have been pretty clean, but this one, 1803, the one that's going out now, and if you don't have it yet, you're on Windows 10, you will have it, because it is now gone, what they say, gone wide. It's everybody's getting it. It's being pushed to everybody. And I think prematurely. And I think that there are kind of significant problems that people, including one of the things people are seeing, blue screens of death, crashes during the install, which is very scary. That can mean sometimes that the install trashes your system. You know, a blue screen during the install can leave your system in a very precarious state. So these are not good. These are significant flaws. Microsoft to this day does not acknowledge them. But people who are covering Windows say it's surprisingly widespread. Unfortunately, the way it works now with Windows 10, remember we all got that for free, you know, the free upgrade from Windows 7? Part of the deal was you have to do updates. You cannot refuse updates. You can defer them. And how long you can defer them will depend on which version of Windows you have. There's a sneaky trick, though, and if you don't have 1803 yet and you're not in a hurry to get Timeline or one of the other kind of mine, there's some cosmetic updates as well. If you're not in a hurry, which probably you're not, one of the ways to defer it is to say that you're on a metered connection. This is a really silly workaround, but if you tell, you open your network settings and you say, this is a metered connection. In other words, I pay for the bandwidth. Most of us have unlimited bandwidth, but lie. Say, I pay for the bandwidth. Microsoft will then not download the update and automatically apply it. I don't know how long that will work for. Quite reasonably, Microsoft wants everybody to update because that keeps the ecosystem healthy. You know, fixes significant flaws that could cause problems in the Windows world, which could cause problems in the world at large. So they want that fixed. So update if you can. If you're worried or you just, you know, you're not sure, you can say defer the update or say I have a metered connection in your network settings and that'll put it off. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Heidi's next. She's running to the phone. From Santa Monica. What? Me? Yeah, hi Heidi. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi, I was here. Thank you, Leo, for taking my call. I have two quick questions. You had mentioned routers, and I wanted to make sure that one of the routers I purchased would be up to date. I bought a Nighthawk AC 1900.
Love it.
I had an Aeris. So that's a good one in terms of trying to deal with the issue with the happy Russian bear. Oh,
well, I do think some of those Netgears were vulnerable to what we call VPN filter. But Netgear has been pretty good, I think, about updating. So the thing to do is to go into your router settings. Do you know how to do that?
Yeah, I bought a brand new one. I had an Aeris, but it was a few years old, and I couldn't get any firmware update. So
yes.
That's why I thought I better.
Oh, you're smart. You know what you're looking for.
Okay.
So yeah, Heidi, okay. You want to make sure you're on the latest firmware.
Okay.
And I think nowadays these newer routers, I'm pretty sure Netgear will do this, will automatically update. That's the key, is because you can't be bothered to always check. You don't know when there's a problem.
Right. So, well, and I had the Aero, but we live in a four-story townhome with a lot of rebar, so I couldn't get the Aero to work.
Oh, really? The Aero wouldn't work for you?
No, so even one level down.
Oh, that's a shame. So what are you going to do with the Nighthawk?
Well, I had the Aeris, and I used extenders. Believe it or not, that were Netgear extenders, and it worked. I mean, very rarely do we have an issue. Maybe it would slow down a little bit, but for the most part, it worked.
Okay. The other thing you can look into, and for people who are in this kind of situation, rebar, of course, metal in the floors and the ceilings and the walls will block Wi-Fi pretty effectively. So one of the things you could do is something called power line networking. And I would look into this if you're having problems still. If it's working, no, nothing to worry about. If your extenders work, fine. But power line networking, you'll plug in wherever your cable modem is, you'll plug in one of these and then plug an Ethernet cable into that. And then above, next stair above, plug in another one. And that can either be a Wi-Fi router or it can be a hardware device. And then you can go all the way upstairs again and plug in another one. TP-Link makes these power line, a lot of companies do, but I like TP-Links, they're cheap, power line networking. And what that does is it uses your power lines, your grid, to, like an Ethernet cable, get the internet upstairs. And so if we can't That's go great. Through the walls, those things work very well.
Thank you. I will look into that. Do you have time for one quick question?
Yep.
One more?
Yep.
Thank you. So, and forgive me, you might have mentioned this in a previous show, and I was probably traveling and missed it. When is the best time to buy a new iMac? I have an iMac that's like a 2012.
That is such a good question. No one knows. And gosh, we were all very hopeful that this past WWDC a couple of weeks ago, Apple might have announced new hardware. They didn't. And it's completely unclear. And there's some significant concern that I share that Apple no longer cares very much about Macintosh. They haven't updated the Mac Pro since 2013. They haven't updated the Mac Mini since 2012. They're very slow to update the laptops. The iMac was updated last year with the iMac Pro, but that starts at $5,000.
I know. Yeah.
And it's now out of date. So I would, you have a 2012. If you can make it limp along, is it working still?
It's beach balling a lot. I had a friend of mine trade out the
replace the hard drive, and that still didn't fix it, and it didn't fix it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need a new one.
If I have a lot of tabs open, I mean, I increased RAM. I've done things along the way because I stupidly bought a Fusion drive.
It's worth trying to keep it up to date, but yeah, it is time for a new one. Cross your fingers this fall. They've got to. Apple has really started to worry me with the Macintosh. They deny it, but I'm worried. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah. Yeah, but it's meaningless because no one knows anything, and Apple is not. With the iPhone and the iPad, Apple's fair. Well, certainly with the iPhone, they're very consistent every year. With the iPad, it's a little unknown. But with Mac, it's completely unknown. They're literally selling a 2013 Mac Pro as new, now, today. And no one should buy that thing. It's terrible. The iMac Pro is very good. I have it. I love it. But it's $5,000 to start. I'm using a 2015 MacBook Pro because that's the last generation of MacBook Pro with the older keyboards, and I will not go to the new keyboard, and I'm worried. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I'm looking on Apple's store site, and under the iMacs, they say new iMacs, the 5K new, but they're using a processor that came out Kaby Lake, which is relatively new, came out in January of last year. So it's only a year and a half old. It probably is fine. It's probably fine. I mean, if you need to get a new iMac, I understand the concern is, I don't want to buy an iMac and then have them announce in 3 months, have them announce a new one. And who knows? You just don't know. And Apple's not consistent at all in the releases of the Macs. Very consistent with the iPhone. Every year in September, there's a new iPhone. A little bit less consistent with iPads. They try to get a new one out every year. Completely inconsistent with Macintosh. No idea. There's no way to predict what Apple's up to. They finally admitted, thank goodness, just Friday, that those keyboards, maybe there are some problems. Apple's facing three class action lawsuits over the keyboards in their MacBooks and the MacBook Pro. The butterfly key, they were so excited about these new butterfly keys. People are having all sorts of problems with stuttering, repetition. They're basically unfixable. Apple has acknowledged now that, there's a problem. We will fix it for you for free. If you paid for a repair in the past, we will refund your payments. We admit it. There's an issue. Unresponsive or sticky keyboard problems. The MacBooks that came out, those little thin, lightweight ones that started in early 2015, 2016, 2017, those are eligible. So are MacBook Pros from 2016 and 2017. You can check and see, of course, and they will repair them if you have an issue. If it's fine, and you know, my wife has several MacBooks. She loves the little thin MacBook. Hasn't had any problems. I briefly had a couple of these, which I got rid of, not because of problems, just because I don't like them. And this is just personal. There's an issue with key pressing, right? A lot of newer keyboards, they don't have much what we call travel. They don't move much. And I like a little more travel in my keyboards. I want to know that I hit the key. I also want a soft landing. You know, when it does hit bottom, it shouldn't stub my finger. The MacBooks, the MacBook Pros, Apple's latest keyboards, not only have very, you know, just a millimeter and a half travel, but they hit hard. And I just find it painful and most importantly, inaccurate to use them. So that's just me, though. And while I'm not alone, it's not universal by any means. You can't get it replaced if you don't like it. I just went back to the 2015. I like that one. Line 3, GJ in Snohomish, Washington. Hello, GJ.
Leo, I haven't talked to you in so long. I'm GJ, a computer pro, your old Twitter buddy from many moons ago.
Wow. What you been up to?
Happy 1500th.
Thank you.
You've been doing the show almost as long as the burning bush has been burning. that's a joke for Dr. Mom.
I hope it keeps burning.
I retired as a computer pro. I moved up here to Snohomish, Washington, the land of net neutrality, thanks to Governor Jay Inslee.
Yeah, you're the one state, Washington State, the one state with state net neutrality rules. California just weakened their rules in a significant way, so it's not going to happen here. But yes, bravo. You're fighting the good fight up there.
And I love it up here. And thank you. You know, I'm still stuck at that like 7900 number on Twitter. You got me way up there as @ computer pro. And even though I'm very funny on Twitter, I'm just stuck at the same place.
Bemoan it, you know, because truthfully, Twitter, come on. There's only a few people there anyway. Twitter isn't a massive, social success as Facebook is.
That's true. Let's not get started on Facebook. I got two new things this week that I think are interesting, and I don't know if you've talked about yet. I got the Fire TV Cube from Amazon.
I have it, and I reviewed it yesterday on the new screensavers. But tell me what you think.
Mine's still in the box. I am an early adopter but late implementer.
I understand, because when you have to modify your home theater, no matter what it is, it's a massive challenge. You've got to pull things out, unwire stuff, rewire stuff. But I have to say, Echo Cube, Echo-powered Fire TV Cube, is kind of cool, because you can walk into the room and say, TV on. Actually, all you have to say is, let's watch Westworld or whatever. Let's watch, I've been watching Goliath on Amazon Prime. Let's watch Goliath. It'll turn on the TV, switch to the right place, and start the show, which is awesome. And then when you leave, you say TV off, and it goes off, which is pretty nice.
I noticed that it talks about an ARC port with HDMI.
If it can get CEC and ARC, the audio return channel, it would like that, but it's not required.
Okay, and the other cool thing is I finally got YouTube Premium. I noticed that it changed from Red to Premium.
That happened this week. It's still YouTube Red, same idea. You pay a fee, no ads. You also get access to Google's music offering for part of that. I think it's a good deal.
One of these days, I'm going to get my podcast going, and then I'll call you back again. I won't wait 3 years, because I think it's been 3 years since we talked. But I'll get my podcast going, and I will talk to you again.
@acomputerpro on the tweets.
Yes. And on Facebook and on Snapchat and on Instagram and on everything. That's me, @acomputerpro.
GJ, great to talk to you.
Thank you, sir.
And I love your puppy in the picture.
I've got two golden retrievers that are now, they'll be 4 years old, and a miniature long-haired dachshund.
Oh.
And, yeah, I love dogs.
Very sweet.
I love
Well, it's nice to talk to you. Thank you, GJ. All right, take care. Our show today brought to you by our great sponsor, LastPass. They are a lifesaver. LastPass saves my bacon all the time. It's the first program I install when I set up a new computer or phone. I install LastPass in my browser so that I automatically fill in passwords to websites. LastPass on my phone, it automatically fills in passwords to apps. See, I don't want to remember passwords. That's a bad thing. If you use passwords you can remember, you're not using good passwords. Maybe you're using the same password over and over. That's even worse. 81% of breaches are caused by weak or reused passwords. Passwords you can remember, passwords you're using on more than one site. And it's really a problem in business. And I want to speak to anybody who owns a business here. I own this business. I had a problem because we had an engineer who couldn't remember his passwords, put them all in a spreadsheet on the public internet, so he could get to it whenever he needed to. Well, he had the right idea, the convenience of getting to it. He had the wrong idea in the sense that he was giving away our passwords to our most precious stuff, our servers, our bank accounts, our QuickBooks login. No! That's when we started using LastPass Enterprise. That's why you should use LastPass Enterprise. It creates long, strong, secure passwords, keeps them in a password vault, gives you complete control and access. You can even set password requirements, length, strength, require two-factor. We do that at work here. You can revoke permissions. You can give permissions. You can have folders that only certain people have access to. It simplifies password management for companies of any size with the tools you need to secure your business and centralize control of employee passwords and apps. It's why we use it, and I love it. And it's also because I believe in password managers. I believe in LastPass, why we give every employee a LastPass account. There's a LastPass for every size business, whether it's LastPass Enterprise for a big business, LastPass Teams for teams of 50 or less, personal use, LastPass Premium, family use, LastPass Family. By the way, that's a great thing for a family to be able to share passwords. When my wife wants to log into Comcast, I say, I already shared the password with you. It's in your LastPass. Saves a lot of time. At work and at home, fix your password woes. Do it the right way. Steve Gibson vetted it and recommended it. I use it. I've been using it for years. LastPass. It is literally the number one most preferred password manager. And the one I tell you everybody ought to use. I wish you would use it now. Start today. Make this a LastPass day. Then you could share the password to the Wi-Fi login with your mother and you wouldn't have this problem. She wouldn't have to call the tech guy. LastPass.com/twit. LastPass.com/twit. Choose the product that's right for you. I am a big believer in all of this. This really is important. LastPass has a security challenge, a checkup that you can go through. Make sure that you haven't reused passwords. They have an easy one-button password change procedure so you can go through a whole bunch of sites very quickly, update the password to something longer, stronger, more secure. I can go on and on. I'm a big fan. LastPass.com/twit. Andrew in Nome, Alaska. Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Leo.
Great to talk to
you. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I am building a power wall for my control room, and I'm having trouble because all these Samsung monitors, the remote control controls all of them.
We have that same problem. Because we have a lot of monitors in the studio. You change one, they all change. It's very frustrating.
It is frustrating. I was wondering, is there some sort of hardware solution or something?
Well, what are you doing with the remote? I mean, don't you leave the monitor on what it is, or why would you want to mess with it?
Right, but when I turn the monitors on, six of these are hospitality monitors, and they default coax.
I see.
So if I could get an SDK and reprogram the firmware, that would work too.
I see.
So that it would default to the input I want.
Yeah, ideally what you'd like to do is somehow do this without the remote. Do it
right.
Software, right? That's right. An interesting question. I mean, you're using consumer-grade monitors, and I guess they just it would be really nice if they had, like, a serial port in there for control. It used to not be uncommon to have a video control port, but I don't think monitors do that. Let's ask the chat room, because I don't know. Is there a way... Not to use the infrared remote, because the remote, you're right, the remote works on all they're not keyed to an individual.
Right, I tried holding it right up to the sensor, and that doesn't work.
Remotes are designed to spray it everywhere.
Right, right. My DVR 15 years ago had this little thing I could glue on to the front of it, and so that the DVR could control the TV.
Yeah, an IR blaster.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the solution, is an IR blaster. We were talking about the Echo Cube, the Fire Cube, that actually has an IR blaster on it, but only has one. You'd need one for each. You'd need one for each. This is a, you know, I don't have an answer off the top of my head. Maybe the chat room will come up with one, or somebody will call. Keep listening. If you have multiple TVs and you want to control each individually, ideally in software, how would you do it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's a great, really great question. I love that. Don't know the answer, though. Okay, let's see. Control your TV. What we don't want to do is infrared. There are remote apps for iOS and Android that use Wi-Fi, because, of course, most phones don't have infrared. That might be a solution, right? Use Wi-Fi. Yeah. What I'm thinking, remember, didn't there used to be serial ports that you would control TVs with? Problem is, they don't have them anymore. LG TV control using serial protocol bindings. OpenHAB. Oh. So if you have a serial port on your TVs, sometimes they're marked service only. There may be a DB9 or some sort of proprietary. Yeah, you can do this with some TVs. This is interesting. So OpenHAB, which is an open home automation system, has some documentation for controlling TVs using a serial protocol. You'd need to first check those monitors and see if they had a service port or some sort of port, and figure out if that does allow serial control. If it does, then you probably are golden, because I would expect that each TV... The binding does not support querying the current state from the TV. Okay. So it's a one-way channel. The protocol supports daisy chaining of serial devices. The binding sends to the broadcast address. So you may have the same issue if you can't uniquely identify each TV and talk to each TV uniquely. Now, the remote, Harmony remote, uses infrared. There is an R. It also may use RF, but you know, that's specific to the TV. Simple control. Let's see what that is. Here you go. That's interesting. Simplecontrol.com. It's an app. And it uses Wi-Fi, which might solve that. The question, though, would be, yeah, these are all home automation solutions. The question is, would it be able to? That's interesting. This is a great challenge. Great question. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography. And we got smartphones, we got smart watches, augmented reality. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number. If you want to call and talk, ask a question, make a suggestion, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still use Skype. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, is coming up in about half an hour. Talk about getting better images. I think we might be ready for a photo review of our assignment, which was to take a picture illustrating the word or concept of hand. I think it might be this week. All coming up. Our chat room at irc.twit.tv loves a challenge. And they've been just going on and on about this last caller. He's a network engineer. He's got a server room. He says he's building a power wall, bunch of Samsung monitors to monitor different things. And he's got a problem because, you know, he wants different TVs to point to different sources and so forth. But if he uses the remote control, they're all the same Samsung TV. Any remote control will change them all. That's no good. And there are, and some TVs have serial ports. Sometimes they're marked as service ports. Sometimes they're not standard serial ports, DB9s or something like that, or DB25s. There's some sort of weird oddball port, so you might need an adapter. But that would be the ideal way, is to connect serial cables to software, and then you'd have a screen somewhere that you could say, this TV should be doing this. That would be the ideal way. And I think in some TVs it would be doable. You just have to figure out if you have a serial interface to that TV. And if you can address that TV specifically instead of broadcasting a command to them all. So that's the correct way to do it. There's also, and I don't know who to credit with in the chat room for this one. A number of people have suggested it. But this is, I mean, I think Turtle was the first. Get a small toilet paper roll or similar tube, tape it over the infrared receiver on each TV, so you're making it kind of highly directional so it can't see the backscatter. And then you can use the infrared remote with each, just by, you know, putting it to the edge of the tube. And of course then you've got a weird looking wall with a bunch of toilet paper tubes taped to it, but it would work. Oh man. 8888 Ask Leo. The chat room is great. There is nothing they can't come up with a solution for, either weird or serious or both. In this case, both. Adam in Ontario, California. Hello, Adam.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. You know, I thought I remembered seeing actually an app on the Google Play Store for Android. Yeah, it's one of those remote control apps that allows you to control multiple screens.
Yeah, if you have, if you can do it with Wi-Fi.
On Wi-Fi.
Yeah, correct. Then you probably would, it probably would be effective, because presumably each TV would have its own, you know, identifier. So yeah, look there. Right. I've seen a number of remote control apps that claim to do something like that. So you're right. That's another option.
Because they were doing it with gaming, like gamers who had multiple monitors and whatnot. I think it's more what it was geared towards, but it seems like it would work.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, and so IR, infrared's a problem because it's, you know, it blasts light everywhere. In fact, we were talking about that Amazon Cube. I can control almost anything with the Cube because each face of the Cube has an infrared blaster on it. And so it just scatters light throughout the whole room. You don't see it because it's outside the visible spectrum, but the TVs see it. And so it doesn't have to be line of sight. So it's that's the design, but you don't want it to be that way. Then you have to do something else. And I think Wi-Fi probably would work better. So good point. Yes.
Yeah, it'd be worth a shot at least. Yeah,
absolutely.
But my original question was, with the remote PC, I remember you saying how you could even access, you know, a computer at home with a mobile device. Does that work in reverse? Can you access a mobile device from a computer?
Wouldn't that be nice?
And
no.
How would that work in terms of like a stolen phone, or if not that, even like a stolen laptop?
So remote PC, sponsor, we should give that disclaimer, it does not work in the opposite direction. And I've never seen a remote PC remote access program that would go from a computer to a phone, let you control a phone remotely, unless that phone is physically connected. And then
what about even just a laptop?
Oh, yeah, you can control a laptop from another laptop, but you can't control a phone from a laptop.
Right. Well, if you had a desktop, and suppose you had a laptop stolen, you could
totally
turn on the location services.
Absolutely,
your laptop was.
Yeah. You're totally, absolutely right. Yeah, it'd be good for that. There are a number of solutions, kind of like that. There's one called LoJack, you know, LoJack for cars. They have one for laptops. Does roughly the same thing. Yeah. It's a little bit of software that's run. Of course, the issue is how sophisticated the thief is. If they're really sophisticated, in fact, I think most thieves these days immediately turn the computer off. And then,
right.
Then you can't do anything.
But that's true.
If the guy just steals it, and this happens all the time. You sit in a coffee shop, somebody walks by, gets your laptop and runs. If the guy just steals it to use it, as soon as he turns it on, yeah, you bet you'd know exactly where it is.
Right. Or even if they're selling it to a pawn shop, I'd imagine they'd want to turn it on to verify that it works at some point.
Yeah, pawn shops.
Small window, I guess.
It'd be my guess that most pawn shops do not want to accept stolen goods, so they're not going to, you know, turn it off and leave it off. Because they know that's what you do if you've stolen it.
Yeah, exactly.
Good suggestion, Adam. Absolutely. Would be a great use for it. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I appreciate it, too.
Have a good one. Brian in Indio, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm well, Brian. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I got a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
First one involving what are your recommendations for doorbell cameras?
Yeah. Oh, you're asking.
Which make model?
Well, I'll tell you which one I use, and I should say they are a sponsor, is Ring, the Ring Video Doorbell. Nest now has a doorbell as well, and haven't tried it yet, but it might be an interesting one to look at because the Nest has face recognition built into it. Ring does not. So the Nest will, when somebody comes to the door, and I don't know this, but this is what Stacey Higginbotham, who's one of our co-hosts and does an IoT show and newsletter. She says it's kind of interesting because it will announce the person. It'll say, Irma's at the door. She said that can be a little annoying, but of course you can turn it off. But that's interesting. So that's the Nest doorbell cam. I have also tried the Skybell, and I did not like the Skybell. I had problems with the Skybell. In fact, the reason I tried it is because somebody called the show and said, I can't get this thing to work. So I ordered one, had similar problems. Skybell has since been updated, so they may have fixed those problems. But I can tell you the one I've used and really like is Ring. And Ring has some features that the Nest does not have, like the neighborhood watch stuff, which I think is really cool. You can share with your neighbors video from your Ring doorbell, which will be very helpful, I think, in catching somebody who's, you know, going down the street stealing packages or something like that. The Nest Hello video doorbell is a little more expensive, but I like the face recognition. I think that's kind of interesting. So I probably should order one and try it. In both cases, and this is something people forget with these devices, you're going to be paying a monthly fee for a subscription to the video. So you can look at the price. But then you should also look at what they're going to charge you to store the video, because all of these devices with cameras, almost all of them, upload to the servers so that you can then look at them. And actually, that can be very cool because I can look at my doorbell from anywhere. I don't have to be on my home network to look at my doorbell. I can even use my Echo Show or the new Fire TV Cube. I can say to the Cube, Echo, show my front door, and it'll show that. Which is cool, but there is a monthly fee for that kind of capability. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
You sound good. You look good. You are good. You're good.
Bad.
So I got this. I don't know. I might regret this, but I got this camera phone, the new the P20. This has a Leica lens, and it's 20 megapixels, and then it has a 20 megapixel. A monochrome lens, got three lenses on it.
The P20 is Huawei, P20, right?
Yeah, it's Huawei. It's not a great phone because it's their version of Android, which is terrible. But I haven't taken many pictures with it yet, but I'm very intrigued. And the camera app, wow, does it have a lot of features. It's kind of impressive.
Good.
Night mode, aperture mode, portrait mode.
Is the P20 their top of the line phone right now?
P20 Pro is their top of the line, yeah. And it's like, you know, they have the Leica branding right on it. I don't know what
I just recently seen a comparison of some of the top of the line phones of different manufacturers and their photo capabilities, and they're pretty much all the same.
I think they're all the same. DxO Mark gave this marginally higher than anybody else, but
yeah, who cares about DxO?
Yeah, yeah.
It's only a tech mark, but it doesn't really tell you anything about the creative possibilities.
Yeah. In a way, this is almost, there's almost too many creative possibilities. I mean, there's just so many
features can also be a distraction. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a promo.
But it looks cool.
Yeah. I'm going to take some pictures, figure out how good it is. I don't trust it completely because it is Chinese and they ask for all sorts of information that the
American. Oh, you mean it's going to send you for your pictures somewhere?
I'm not worried about the pictures, but but right at the beginning, before you do anything else, it says for purposes of weather, we need to know, we need your permission to get your locale, your IMEI number, and your MAC address.
What the heck do they need your
email
for?
They don't need that for weather. But that's one of the first permissions you give them. It's literally the second permission you give them.
Oh,
and at
wow.
that point, you've given Huawei complete access.
It's pretty much it's almost as bad as his social security number.
Yeah, they can pinpoint what you're personally doing. Now I don't know why the Chinese government would
dodgy.
Care, but still I don't. Yeah, it's pretty dodgy. And you know I was like, should I put LastPass on here? Should I put any of my private stuff?
I wouldn't. After that, I wouldn't.
No. One interesting thing is you can root it. They have an They have an unlocking code you can get on their website. And I'm thinking maybe root this and put.
So you mean you can put another firmware on that's from an even less secure third party?
Oh, good point.
That sounds fun.
Good point.
Oh, from someone who you don't know at all.
At all.
Yeah,
Huawei at least is Huawei's a. I mean,
they have an office somewhere at least.
Yeah. They're a good. I thought they were a good company. They made one of the 6P, I think, was made by Huawei.
And don't get me wrong, I'm a great fan of open source, but that just sounds.
That was, when I saw that, I went, what? That it was, and they were, at least they were upfront about it. All right, I got to run. I'll talk to you in 15.
Talk to you.
Thank you. 888-827-5536. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. You can go to the website free, no sign up. And find anything I've talked about on today's show or any of the 1,500 shows. 1,500. I have to a tip of the hat to KFI and its great program director who's still there, Robin Bertolucci, who brought me in January 4th, 2004. Brought me in. They had their previous computer show guy had gone across town, gone to another station. She called me up. I'd worked for her in San Francisco years before. She said, would you like to do a radio show on KFI in Los Angeles? We'll call you the tech guy on KFI. See how it rhymes. And I said, well, heck yeah. Work for you, Robin, anytime. And a testament to her, because program director of major market radio stations, not what you would call a long-term job in most cases. They're the first person to get fired if anything goes wrong, but she has been an amazing steward of one of the great radio stations in the country. And the fact that she and I are both still here after 14 years is a great testament to her brilliance and competence and my good fortune having taken a job with her. So thank you, Robin, for 1,500 shows. And please don't fire me. I'd like to do 1,500 more if you don't mind. Actually, Robin, after 3 years working just at KFI, Robin very kindly suggested that we syndicate the show and went to her boss at Clear Channel and said, this guy's good. You should put him on. And now we're on almost 200 stations all over the country. And I've been doing that for 11 years. So thank you to Premier Radio Networks, to Clear Channel, to KFI, and to Robin for putting the tech guy on the air 1,500 shows later. Line 3, Jim, Tallahassee, Florida. Hello, Jim.
Afternoon. I won't embarrass either one of us by telling you how long I've been listening to y'all.
Well, you know, I was a child prodigy.
Well, I haven't paid attention to your age, but I think we're about the same
I think we are.
Generation.
Yeah, well, I was telling Kim earlier in the show that I started in radio, good Lord, 42 years ago. So that'll give you some idea.
Well, I was fixing radio. I was fixing TV transmitters and thing back 42 years ago.
Oh, there you go. Were you a radio engineer?
Licensed first phone with Marine radar endorsement.
Nice. A first ticket. Man, those were the creme de la creme in those days.
Yeah, well, they done changed them to general, so.
I know.
Yeah, it's
I know. Used to have to have a license to do what I'm doing.
that was the third class.
I got my radio third class, yep, with broadcast endorsement. I have it somewhere. FCC hasn't asked for that in some time.
Yep. Well, I got a couple questions about Android.
Yes.
Now, I'm legally blind, so I don't have access to plugging my phone into someone's cigarette lighter when it needs charging, and the city bus is what my transportation is limited to.
I don't think they have cigarette lighters. No, I don't think they have them in the buses, no.
Yeah, so do you know of a company that has or is contemplating going back to replaceable batteries?
No. No one's doing that. But the good news is, and the reason I think they're not doing it is you can get portable battery packs that are great. And the idea is you carry that in your coat pocket and you can have them as big as you want. You know, the little lightweight ones are not much bigger or heavier than your phone, and they'll charge your phone one whole time. But you can get ones that'll do three or four times or longer. So I carry one of those with me at all times. My favorite manufacturer of these is Anker, A-N-K-E-R. They sell them on Amazon. So if you just go to Amazon and you look for Anker battery packs or portable, actually, I guess portable chargers are probably the right way to search for this. The PowerCore 5000 is $18. It's about the size of a cigarette lighter itself. And it's very compact. And it just has a USB port on it. And you just plug in your cable to your phone, and it'll recharge your phone all the way to the tippity top.
Well, just have to be careful when you plug the thing in.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about those. They're small enough, they're not going to be a problem. It's kind of like carrying an extra phone battery.
Well, the next question is for your brain trust.
Yes.
Being we're down in Florida, of course, the weather never changes in Florida. It's always hot. But
it's just a question of less hot or more hot, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, my question / complaint, or hoping that your guys can come up with a better app, is I've got about a half a dozen weather apps on my phone, and I kind of just take what they're saying and then average them together. And that's
probably a good system, yeah.
Well, it kind of works, but, you know, I don't understand how the same app can have two different current temperatures.
Yeah, you know, that is weird, isn't it?
Well, like I said, that and the fact, you know, I had one time when I had one app tell me it was 20% chance of rain, and the other app told me it was 80% chance of rain. And that's an awful lot of averaging to do.
I had high hopes. There was an app that I really liked that got the weather from, you know, there's several weather services. Ultimately, the best probably is the U.S. Weather Service or NOAA.
Well, I've got the NOAA app. I've got the National Weather Service app.
Yeah.
But even using the same app,
they get different results. Yeah.
Well, they give different temperatures.
Well, that's probably mostly because of a lag in updating, right? Because they don't to save your battery, they're not going to update all the time. So that's just a lag in update. And they have different reporting stations in different locations. But more to me, more important is that sometimes the forecasts vary significantly. A lot of people use yr.no, which is the Norwegian weather service. That one's free. I'll tell you if I could find this app for you, because there was one I really liked because it allowed you to use your own home weather station in addition. Let me look for it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So the idea, which was a great idea, was you'd have a weather station that would be your local weather. That would be reported not only to you, but it would also be reported to the rest of the users. So you'd have better weather results. Yeah, it looks like they've gotten out of that business. Now they're doing some. Okay. Okay, here's the world's largest. So this is, I wonder if this, yeah, so this was, this I guess is still around. But can you get the NetAtmo, or they kind of, they stopped doing it? So they sold a weather station. It was kind of a nice-looking weather station that you would put in. Yeah, there it is. Then you'd get the app, and you'd always know what the weather was like at your house because you'd have the weather station. But then they also aggregated everybody else who had a NetAtmo. And yeah, I wonder if they still sell this. They have a rain gauge, a wind gauge, $150. But then when you use the app, actually, you don't have to buy the weather station to use the app. But if you wanted, you know, hyper-local weather, you could do that. See, and then you'd know what your weather was in your neighborhood. Good ratings. I like this. Should I do this? Let's get this. Weather station plus rain gauge. I want the wind gauge, too. I want it all, my friend. I want it all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time for Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. Chris lives in Germany, which you may not know because he sounds like he's sitting next to me, but he's actually in Germany.
I can put my German accent on you on for you, Leo.
You have no accent at all. That's the other thing. He speaks perfect English. As do many Germans, oddly enough. But I was asking him, because we have in America, we have a fetish about weather. We really love weather and weather apps and weather stations. I found that weather station. We'll talk more about that after Chris's segment. I want to use up his segment. But I was wondering, do Germans have the same fetish?
Of course they do.
Yeah.
Everyone has it.
Yeah.
Especially as the weather here is not really that predictable. Europe tends to be like good for one or two days and then the forecast just...
I don't
trust forecasts. I like my little 1 hour preview for like when I'm out with a group of photographers. Like on this weekend, we had a workshop, so I want to know what's going to happen in the next hour. And
if you're a photographer,
that's most important for me.
You need that, yeah. And we've talked about the photographer's ephemeris TPE, which is an app for your smartphone that'll tell you things like where the sun is, the moon is, where the stars are. You need to add that to the weather though, because if it's cloudy, it doesn't matter where anything is. So we are ready for an assignment review. I don't want to waste too much time on weather because we've got a lot of pictures of hands to talk about.
Well, weather and photography are closely related.
They are.
That's a topic we could talk about for another entire hour if we want to. We had the hand assignment. And hands are such a rewarding subject when you do photography because hands always tell stories. People use their hands all the time. Hands show age. Hands show... there's jewelry, there's other decoration on hands, and it is just wonderful what people do with hands. And I love including hands in photos when I take pictures of people. It's just a part of your body that tells a lot of stories. People have delivered wonderful photos, and I've again taken the time to look through them, and I've chosen three pictures that have something in common other than showing hands. The first one is by Rod Golda. It's titled Henna, and what we see is a woman putting it's a henna tattoo on a person's hand. I think it's called a mandi or something like that.
I don't know that, but we know henna tattoos. Yeah.
What she does is she puts a henna paste on a person's hand, and then that sits there for a while, and it kind of adds the color to the hand, and then you wash it off, and you have this tattoo on your hand that's temporary, and that'll go away after a few days. And it's decoration on the hand. It's like a tattoo. I like this photo because it's a very colorful thing. The person applying the tattoo, her clothes are very colorful. It suggests she's probably from an Indian heritage or something. The only kind of a bit of distracting thing is the green hose in the background and the Walmart bag, but that's in the bokeh, so it doesn't really bother
always
me too
a
much.
Problem for me is the messy
backgrounds are always difficult.
Yeah. If you could just cut that out, this would be so strong.
True. Yeah. So here is a hand being decorated with a temporary tattoo. The second picture I've chosen is by Alan Guido, Shadow of the Day. And I like that because what we're looking at is this is maybe a door or top of a box or something, a wooden thing, and a shadow of a hand on it, which is framed within shadows. So you have a little corner in the photo showing this frame, the shadow of a hand, and then you see the hand that is responsible for that shadow in the left top of the photo. And while it's not a tattooed hand, it's interesting because that box has some graffiti on it, some writing on it, and it's really interesting to see how that writing kind of combines with the shadow of the hand. So it's kind of a temporary tattoo on that shadow of the hand, which I really liked.
I do like it. And I love wood grain for some reason in photography.
And the wood grain is weathered wood. So yeah. The wood itself tells quite a story. There's on the top, there's a stain, coffee stains on it from a cup or something. So might be in a workshop. I don't really know. There's color flaking off of it.
It's cool.
Very, yeah. Very cool. Good stories, lots of stories in that photo. And the last but not least, by David Putzier, Count on Your Fingers. So
this one is great. This is hysterical.
Isn't it? It's a montage. So we're looking at an outstretched hand. Again, tattoos. So that's what kind of keeps what combines those three pictures or what makes them similar. And the outstretched hand, what David did is he photoshopped a hand on each of the fingers. So it's the same hand. And on the pinky, it shows a 1. And on the ring finger, it shows 2. And on the middle finger, it shows the number 3 and the 4 and the 5. So it's a hand with hands for fingers. And that is such a creative idea. It's interesting. It's well executed. Technically well executed, because he definitely took those pictures of the other hands in the same light. You see the shadows going in the same direction. Oh, yeah. It fits seamlessly. Good job. And again, as I said, the tattoo theme repeating in that one as well. So,
are you seeing more abstract, photoshopped style pictures like this these days? Because it's so easy to do now, thanks to software.
I mean, there are certainly a lot of those, but either some of them are really well done and you don't notice that they have been manipulated.
You may be seeing them and not knowing. That's right, yeah.
Or it's like it's one of these kind of shots where it's obvious that that is a manipulation because you wouldn't see something like that in the real world. But in general, no, not really. And it kind of depends. I don't really look around searching for these kind of photos, but I really like at the moment someone is that creative. It really kind of blows my mind because you have to have that idea first, right? The execution only comes after you have the idea. So the idea is what counts here, and then if that's a well executed idea, that gets bonus points from me.
And this was definitely intriguing without attempting to deceive. I mean, it's obviously photoshopped.
Oh, obviously not.
Well, thank you, all of you, for your submissions. There were some very nice ones. You can see all of them if you go to the Flickr group, the Tech Guy group on Flickr, FLICKR.com. Flickr is a free photo sharing site owned by Smug Mug, good friends, and a really great company. So they bought them from Yahoo a couple of weeks ago. Really a relief to us because we now know it'll be in good hands. And we have a group there, Tech Guy Group, which has tens of thousands of members and lots of photos. In fact, let's do another assignment. What do you say, Chris?
I definitely have one here, and we're going to stick with the general theme of body parts. This time we're going to look at eyes. So the next assignment is eyes.
Eyes. Okay. The eyes are the windows to the soul, so this should be a good subject. Although
absolutely.
It doesn't have to be, I mean, it's EYES, but it doesn't have to be eyeballs.
Well, there's lots of eyes around us.
Okay. I'm going to do this one. I keep forgetting, and I'm going to do this one. So here's how it
practice
works.
Practice with your 50-millimeter lens.
I will. I'm going to do it with my nifty 50 manual focus because I need to practice that. Here's how it works. You take a picture, and if you find one you like that illustrates the idea eyes, tag it with eyes, upload it to Flickr. It's free to do that. And then submit it to the Tech Guy group. Our moderator, Renee Silverman, she's great. She'll send you a note saying thank you. You can do up to one a week. And in about 4 weeks, so you have four chances here, Chris will pick three that he wants to talk about on the show. You'll find Chris's work. He's a great photographer and great workshops, too, at discoverthetopfloor.com. And we'll talk again next week, Chris. Thank you.
Talk to you.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, I found a weather station that you can that uploads to Weather Underground. So that probably is a better way to do it, since Weather Underground is kind of like a public.
Yeah, I was thinking about getting a NetAtmo because I'm also a bit of a numbers nerd, but I wouldn't have a good place to put it other than close to the house. And
this one doesn't
give me the right readings.
This I'm looking at. It's called the Ambient Weather. It's cheaper than the NetAtmo because it includes all these sensors. So it's on Amazon for $169 US. Mm-hmm. And it's Wi-Fi and battery powered. So you could
Wi-Fi and battery powered.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you could put it fairly distant from the these are backup batteries. It does say it wants a DC
adapter. I think we can get that here, yeah.
It uses because if you're going to use a Wi-Fi, you probably need DC.
Yeah, the Wi-Fi would take up too much power. Yeah. Mm.
And then
I just rely on the Norwegians. Maybe I just rely on the Norwegians.
Yeah, I like
Norwegians.
That's my weather app. That's what I use.
That's my weather app too. Yes,
and they're perfectly good for the U.S. as well as Europe. I mean, they do fine.
Yeah, absolutely. They have good data.
Bob the mechanic says weather stations need daily maintenance. Oh man, This monitors indoor and outdoor conditions, wind speed, wind direction, rainfall, UV, solar radiation, indoor temperature, indoor humidity, barometric pressure, dew point, heat index, wind chill, and more. Wow. Wow.
Well. Daily maintenance. Hmm.
I don't know about that. I'm going to dust it off.
I want to set it and forget it kind of thing.
Yeah. That's why the NetAtmo looks good. It's kind of in a sealed tube, and it looks like it probably doesn't need daily maintenance, but who knows. Thank you, Chris. Wow.
All right.
Great to talk to you. See you next week. Thank you, my friend.
Take care.
Bye-bye. 8888 Ask Leo. I guess when I mentioned that Flickr had been acquired, it was a surprise to some of you. So let me reiterate, because I think this is really good news. Flickr, which is a long-time photo sharing site, it's been around since the early 2000s, was owned by Yahoo and, frankly, neglected by Yahoo towards the end. It hadn't really been updated much. In fact, some of the signs and neglect are still there. They, for instance, I can't do a slideshow anymore because it requires Flash. they'll fix that. Was purchased by another site that I've been using since 2005 called SmugMug. This is a site that lets professional photographers create a website for portfolio review, for sharing with family, friends, and clients. It does a beautiful job displaying your photos, has lots of templates so you can make it look as you wish. It also offers e-commerce opportunities. So you can get photo printing through there, mugs, calendars, placemats, mouse pads, and all of that you can mark up if you want to make a little money on the side. So it's not free, but it's very much beloved by professional photographers, and I've used it forever. Leo.camera is where I put my best shots. That's a SmugMug site. So they acquired Flickr, and they're slowly moving everything over. They've moved the engineering team over. They're going to keep the Flickr engineering team, Yahoo. Well, maybe I shouldn't say Yahoo. Woohoo. Yay. You still have to log in through Yahoo's authentication servers. It's taken them a while, but they say they'll be able to get all the data and the software moved over fairly quickly because they're similar. In fact, they've been working together for a long time. They're all friends. So it's really, really good news. It means Flickr will survive. It doesn't. They don't overlap because, as I said, SmugMug's really for displaying your photos. Flickr's for sharing your photos, for putting them up, letting other people comment on them, interact with them. There's groups and things. That's why we use it for the Chris Markmart segment, our photo guy's monthly assignment, because it's a great place to share photos. So Flickr will stick around. as Flickr.com. Smug Mug will stick around as SmugMug.com. But together, I think they're going to be a big improvement. I'm very, very excited about this. And for those of us who loved Flickr but were worried, a huge relief. Let's talk about weather stations. And I'd love to hear from you. So a caller right before Chris was asking, you know, about weather and why different apps give you different results. I asked a meteorologist about this once, and he said, well, you know, they all get their data from the same place, the U.S. Weather Service. But how they interpret it, how they display it, how often they update it really varies. And so, for instance, he said, don't use Yahoo Weather. That's terrible. But if you know, weather.gov is the kind of the canonical source of information. But what's interesting is there are other weather apps that will use this data in conjunction with personal weather station data. And the one I was trying to remember is NetAtmo, NETATMO. You can buy a NetAtmo weather station for under $200 and then use the NetAtmo software to see what your local, hyper-local weather is at your house or your business, and then see forecasts based on that information plus weather service information. It works with Amazon's Echo and things like that, so you could say, hey, what temperature is it outside, and it will query your personal weather station. I see others, though, at Amazon that are less expensive or have more capability for the same price. So, and a number of those tie into a well-known kind of, I don't know how to describe it. Is it a open source weather system? The Weather Underground. And I think the Weather Underground is an interesting idea. It's kind of a bunch of other people's weather stations. Many weather stations, if you buy them, can automatically upload your data to the Weather Underground. These are weather junkies, like many, many people are. And I think it's a very interesting business. I think they're associated with the Weather Channel. I'm not sure. I think the Weather Channel acquired the Weather Underground. I think that's what happened. Whether that will make it better or worse, I don't know. I think it'll make it better, right? I think the Weather Channel is pretty much all about weather. So that's another thing to look at. There's Weather Underground apps. They're free. There's also Weather Channel apps. They're free. And you can get a weather, if you want a local weather, you can get a weather station that you put outside your house. Now, somebody in the chat room said, just remember, weather stations require updates and fixes, and more importantly, maintenance. You got to clean them. Okay. Takes some of the fun out of it, doesn't it? Bob, the mechanic, who's the guy who told me this, said a lot of weather data also comes not from the National Weather Service, but from Met Services of other countries. All registered by the World Meteorological Organization. And we'd mentioned YR.no, the Norwegian Weather Service. That's one. So, yeah, I mean, weather is a global phenomenon. The interesting thing is weather forecasting has actually become more accurate. Why do you think? Because of powerful computing. And artificial intelligence, or maybe it'd be better to say machine learning. But it's improving our weather forecasting. We were much better, for instance, in predicting major storms in the last few years, and we have been in decades previous. The 5-day forecast has become as accurate as a 3-day forecast. It's hard to do weather because it's what we call a chaotic system. In theory, you could model weather perfectly, just as a computer can, you know, model a manufacturing process or a chess game. The thing is, with a manufacturing process, the computer has access to all the inputs, all the information. And with if you can get total information awareness on a process, you can predict it and control it very accurately. Weather, it's a chaotic system. It's unpredictable. We don't know. You can't necessarily attribute cause and effect to different weather conditions. There's too many variables, too many things. It makes it very hard. You need a massive computer to do this. And it is probably the case that in the next 10 years or so, with the advent of computing, it's called quantum computing, which will give us significantly more computing capabilities, that we will be finally able to model weather fairly accurately over a long period of time, like months and years. Right now, you know, weather forecast is pretty unpredictable. It depends where you live, but it can be pretty unpredictable. It's a fascinating subject, isn't it? And I do think that the advent of machine learning and computing power over the next few years, you're going to see weather become more accurate, much more accurate. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. If you want to talk about weather or anything else, this is all about technology, right? And how technology is amazingly changing the world that we live in. Sacramento, David on the line. Hi, David. Thanks for hanging on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thanks, Leo. Longtime listener. Hi. 73DE Whiskey 6 JAH.
Very nice to talk to you. Whiskey 6 Tango Whiskey Tango.
Julia Alpha Hotel.
I don't know what that means, but thank you. I'm a terrible ham because I realized after I got all this set up and got the license and everything, I got a general license, I realized I talk on the radio all the time. I have no desire to go home and talk some more. I'm not like Art Bell. He would go back on the air and just keep talking.
Me too. I do D-Star most of the time now because...
That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Very cool. Anyway, my question is stupid. And it's a very simple thing. I've got a couple of Western Digital solid-state hard drives, pocket drives, that I've had hooked up to my Dish network as an alternative way to absolve movies to. And they want you to reformat it. And once it's reformatted that way, a regular computer can't reformat it.
That's right. Because they have a... This is a copy protection scheme. They have a proprietary format, which is required for use with the Dish, but won't work with anything else, so you can't copy programs. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Frick.
Isn't that stinky?
A few of my old radios are like that.
Yeah, it's not. TiVo did it. A number of companies do this. And probably it isn't that complicated, a proprietary format. Probably it's just a slight modification. And if you looked around, I bet you'd find people. But yeah, so that means you have to dedicate. You have to dedicate those USB sticks to that device, basically.
Yeah. All right, Leo. Thanks so much. Listening for years. I love
thanks.
You.
Thanks. Hey, Keith 512 in our chat room says, Linux. We'll see it. It's probably so Linux can, unlike Windows and Mac, which are limited to the number of file systems.
Exactly. I used to be a Linux nerd.
All right. Well, he says that you might be able to read it in Linux. That'd be worth a try.
Okay. I'll try that.
All right.
Leo.
My pleasure.
Love you.
Take care. Love you, too. Thanks for listening.
7-3.
Love my hams. Yes, I do. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got smartphones. We've got smart watches. We got all sorts of gizmos and gadgets. This is the tech show. So if you've got a question or a comment or a suggestion about technology, I'd love to hear from you. My phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, 8888-ASK-LEO. There's a website. It's free also. No sign-up or anything. It's techguylabs.com. And whenever we talk about something, links will show up there. I want to put a link to a weather station that Bob the Mechanic in our chat room recommends. He said, if you really want a good weather station, go to Gill Instruments. You get a Metpac RG, it'll only be $3,000. Oh, man. Okay. I don't need to know the weather that bad. I could just look out the window. We are fascinated by weather, aren't we? Here in Northern California, it's very consistent. We have a rainy season, a dry season. Temperatures are pretty predictable within a range during those two seasons. That's about it. There's no lightning. There's no hurricanes. There's no tornadoes. Rain is only, 5 months a year. And that's that. So I think probably don't need a $3,000 weather station to know which way the wind blows. Rachel in Springfield, Illinois. Hello, Rachel. Lee Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey there, Leo. How's it going?
Great. How are you, Rachel?
I'm good. Long time no talk. About a few months, probably.
Well, it's about time then. I've been missing you.
Congratulations on 1,500.
Holy cow.
Awesome.
Holy cow. Amazing.
So,
Thank you.
When did you start this show? When did you start this one?
The Tech Guy Show started January 4th, 2004. And you can go back and listen to that first episode if you want.
Yeah, I know.
It's all recorded.
So you finished your TV days and went back to radio.
Yeah. So what happened was I quit. I've been radio since my youth. But when Tech TV came along and I was doing two shows a day, 5 days a week, I didn't want to, but I felt like, well, I really need to see my family. So I didn't want to, but I thought I should. So I quit the radio, and that was in 1998. And then in 2004, when the cable channel started to founder and I saw the writing on the wall, that was, thankfully, when Robin called me from KFI, and I said, yes. And I did work 7 days a week for some time, but
well,
I'm
that's
glad
a typical radio person anyway.
Isn't it? Have you ever worked in radio, Rachel?
Yes, actually I do.
You have that voice. You sound great.
Oh, thank you.
What station are you on?
I do some community radio now. I used to be on a local station here in Springfield, Illinois, WNNS, but I do some community radio now with WQNA.
You know, it's not just the voice. It's you have a confidence that comes across.
You.
Yeah, you sound, and that's important, right? You don't want to go on the radio and sound like you have to pretend, even if you're not confident, you pretend you're
right?
confident. Right?
Exactly.
So what can I do for you?
I wanted to follow up with you. A couple things, actually, while I have you, too. I wanted to see if possibly I could catch up with somebody off the air. I'm totally blind. I'm also... I had come up to see you when I was getting my guide dog in San Rafael. Kim and I had a nice San Rafael chat.
I remember. Yeah.
I got pictures with you and
I. Yeah. Hi, Rachel. Oh, I remember. Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah. And so I wanted to follow up. I'd like to touch base with somebody about the chat room because I'm finding it kind of inaccessible and it might just be on my end.
Well, let me explain how the chat room works, and I will get you in touch with somebody. So here's what you should do. Send me an email. Probably the best way would be leo@leoville.com. That's my personal email.
Yep. I've talked to your sister Eva while.
Yeah. She used to answer all my mail. So I will then connect you with one of our chat mods who's great, and she'll help you figure it out.
That'd be awesome.
It is accessible, but I should explain the way the chat room works. It's not my thing. We pay for a server, but it's really a community project. People who follow the shows and who are enthusiasts, and so it's self-moderated. They moderate it. I don't set the rules. I'm there, but I don't. I'm just another member of the community in that chat room. So, but it is using a technology called IRC, which is predates the World Wide Web. I mean, it is
I'm familiar with it. I guess I'm just not very good at it.
Well, you need what you'll need is an IRC. You can do it in the web. And if you just go in your browser to irc.twit.tv, you'll be able to do it. But it may not be as accessible as you'd like. And so what you need
I want to hang out in the back of the class, you know?
Yeah, you need a fully accessible IRC client. And I'm sure I'll hook you up with Osnet, and I'm sure she can figure out which would work best for you.
That'd be awesome. And the other follow-up was to the gentleman that you talked to yesterday. I figured you probably didn't have his number, but if he wants to contact Kim, I'm happy to give my number and see if there's some way I can help him, because I actually do use the Bard service, which is the talking book service on Internet Explorer 11, and it does work.
He was using the Library of Congress audiobooks.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And he said that IE11 couldn't listen to them, and so that's what I suspected. If you use Bard, that might solve that problem.
Well, actually, okay, honey. IE11.
Somebody wants mom's attention.
Yes.
And it ain't your guide dog.
Right. This kid is so smart. She's 3, and she orders my Uber vehicles on my Amazon device.
Isn't that amazing nowadays?
And scary.
I wonder how her generation is just going to have a completely different relationship with technology. It's very interesting.
Say hi to Leo. Say hi to Leo.
Hi, Leo.
Hi. What's your name?
My name is Delaney, Leo.
Delaney, you sound so smart for 3. She's 3?
Yes, she's 3.
She's beautifully eloquent.
Yeah.
Holy
she is.
Cow. I'm impressed.
I'm kind of proud of her, though.
You ought to be. Wow.
She's a pet girl. She gets my computer with JAWS and starts, hitting the letters
She's going to be very,
she's gonna be very
literate. That's really exciting.
But, yeah, I'm happy to help that. Enough, 1 minute, baby. I'm happy to help this gentleman out if he wants to call him and leave a number.
Excellent. So call back. I don't remember his name, but call back, and we will hook you up with Rachel, and she can walk you through. This is what's so great. I mean, this is what community means. We really help each other. She can help walk you through using the Bard. Do you use the application, or you use it in IE11?
I use everything.
Okay.
That's part of my job is to do technology. So I use everything, but I download them on IE11, transfer them to an SD card to another device, or I'll use the application. So I do it all.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate your help, Rachel, and I love Delaney. I hope you'll come back and see us.
Next time I get a dog, I will be there.
All right. I hope you'll bring Delaney. She sounds adorable.
I absolutely will. All right.
Thank you.
And I'll email you as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And I will send along the information you need.
Thank you so much. Have a great one.
Anytime. Yep. Isn't that sweet? Isn't that nice? This is what we need in this country, in this world. Forget the country. This is what we need in the world, is a community of people who help each other out, you know, neighbor to neighbor. I think humans are extremely good at that. We tend to be so tribal, unfortunately. You know, sometimes that tribalism creates barriers and borders. But I think there's also a natural instinct to share and help one another. Let's foster that. I like that. That's the thing I like. Let's be friends. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Sarah, Los Angeles is next. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you?
My dad always listens to you on the radio, so I just wanted to say he just told me to ask you a question that I have.
Okay.
I'm traveling overseas in the summer, and I'm looking for an international cell phone plan.
Yeah. So tell me a couple of things. Oh, yeah. My daughter's overseas right now. She's in Budapest. She's going to Prague after this. She just got back from Israel. Where are you going, and how long are you going for?
Well, I'm actually going to Israel also, and I'm going to Europe.
Okay. For how long?
For a month.
For a month. So multiple countries in Europe.
Amsterdam, Italy, and France.
Oh, how fun. Are you excited?
Very.
Oh, man. Trip of a lifetime.
Just graduated, so.
They used to call this the Grand Tour, and every well-educated person was supposed to go in between high school and college on your Grand Tour. Now, this is your Grand Tour. How exciting.
Yes,
so there's a couple of things. You know, there's three things that you do with a smartphone. Phone calls is one, obviously. Text messaging is another. And data is the third, the ability to surf the web or, more importantly, as you travel, get maps and locations and directions and that kind of thing. Maybe make restaurant reservations or hotel reservations, that kind of thing. Stay in touch. So I think a smartphone is a really valuable device for travel, and I'm sure your dad... Just as I made sure my daughter had a good phone and was able to stay in touch because I want to make sure she's okay.
Yeah.
So who's your cell phone provider right now?
Verizon.
Unfortunately, not the best for international travel for two reasons. One, many Verizon phones don't work well overseas because they use technology that is usually only used in America called CDMA. I mean, you need a GSM phone. So that's problem number one. But many Verizon phones these days, like, I bet you have an iPhone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're in good hand. Good luck, because the iPhone from Verizon is international. The other thing is Verizon's international plans are pricey. Now, this has changed a lot because T-Mobile kind of kicked this all off by saying, you know what, we're not going to charge you for international data, and we're not going to charge you for international texting, and we're only going to charge you 20 cents a minute for international calling, so there. And when T-Mobile did that, Sprint said, oh, we could do that, and then AT&T said, okay, and then Verizon, too. All of them have lowered the cost of international data. Data is the thing that will really eat you alive. You're not going to make a lot of calls. Texting, if you start sending a lot of texts, I bet you text a lot, right? Because your generation.
Yeah.
Texting could add up if you had to pay per text. So one solution is to get a phone from T-Mobile. But now your phone will work on T-Mobile. Here's the good news. Verizon with iPhones doesn't lock. You know, you have that thing in there called a SIM card, a little chip that's in the phone. Do you know about that?
On the side.
Yeah, on the side. You could pop it out. So that chip is the phone's personality. It's your phone number. It says what network you're on. A Verizon phone is essentially unlocked on the SIM card. So that means you could pop it out. One option you'd have is to go to T-Mobile and get a SIM just for that month. Another option you'd have is when you get to Europe, to replace the SIM in your phone with a local SIM. The nice thing about Europe, all the countries you're in, they have roaming agreements. That means you buy one chip, say, is probably Holland's your first stop, right? In the Amsterdam?
Paris.
Paris. Oh, have you ever been to Paris?
No, my
friend. Are you, you're going with a group?
I'm going with a couple of my friends.
Oh, you're going to the greatest city in the world. You're going to love it so much. Oh, I'm so jealous. Ah, it's a very romantic city. It's a beautiful city. When you get to the airport, you can usually go to, there'll be little booths there, sometimes there's vending machines, and get a French SIM card that has French data and will let you inexpensively get unlimited data for the month in France, Italy, and Holland. But it has one downside. It will change your phone number. You'll suddenly have an international phone number. Mm-hmm. Your old Verizon phone number is no longer functional once you take that SIM card out of the iPhone. So that is another option for you. I've got a third option that I really like. And this is what I did with my daughter. She has a T-Mobile phone, so I wasn't too worried about phone calls. They're not expensive. Texting, it's unlimited international. I wasn't worried about that. But data can isn't very fast on T-Mobile internationally. So I got her a little I call them MiFis. It's a little Wi-Fi dongle that uses international LTE and 4G for its connection. And then you join it with your phone via Wi-Fi. So you don't have to change your phone number. You get unlimited data. You get it fairly cheaply. Now, what I have may be more than your dad wants to spend or you want to spend, but I'm going to tell you about it anyway. This is what Abby brought with her, my daughter brought with her. It is a it's a kind of an orange puck, about the size of a hockey puck, for international data. And what's it called now? I'm just drew a blank on the name of it. It'll chat room will tell me. But you buy this thing. Only via Wi-Fi. You can keep it in your purse or pocket, and then it's Wi-Fi to your phone. Now this is key. You turn off international data, or actually, what it'll say on your iPhone is data roaming. Turn that off, because data roaming lets you use the French cell phone network. You don't want to do that. That will be a lot of money. So turn off data roaming on your phone. You join this puck, the Wi-Fi in the puck, and then as you wander around, it gets roaming, but you don't have to pay for it. You pay $8 a day or $99 for the month, and you have unlimited data on that thing. And better yet, your three friends can share it with you. So get them all to chip in on it, and then you'll be in great shape, because you'll have – it's called the SkyRoam. And I thank Tony in the chat room for reminding me. Thank you, Tony. I couldn't remember. SkyRoam.com. And it'll work in all three of those countries. You'll buy it, or you can rent it, and you can split that cost among your friends, and then you pay $99 for a month of unlimited data. Again, split that with your friends, because up to five people can use it at the same time. And then you'll still have your phone number. Texting, you should contact Verizon and see if you can get an international texting plan, because that'll save you money. But if you use – do you use WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger, or you probably use Apple – yeah, and Apple Messages. Those all use data. So you won't have to worry if you're using WhatsApp. That'll be using the SkyRoam, not your cell phone. So you'll still be able to message with all your friends. You can Snapchat. All that stuff is data.
Can you call from the Wi-Fi? Because I know WhatsApp.
You can if you use WhatsApp to do it, or Google's Hangouts, or one of the Skype.
Yeah,
then you can call as well.
Okay.
And your phone supports Wi-Fi calling, so you probably be able to do that very easily. Actually, though, wait a minute. That will use minutes, and those minutes will be charged at the international rate. So it's certainly, before you go, call Verizon and just make sure that you understand what the rules are and what it's going to cost you. And they do have international plans, but their international data plan is expensive, and you don't get much data. So you'd be much better off using something like a SkyRoam. Or when you get to Paris, they offer devices, same thing, there. And then you can all share it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So when you get to Paris, I had to take a break there for the commercial. When you get to Paris, you and your buddies can chip in on a rental. They'll have it at the airport. It's the same thing. The only nice thing about having the SkyRoam is you've already got it. It's all set up. You know how it works, and you're ready to go. But if you're willing to take a little chance, and you're taking a big chance, this is an adventure, isn't it? If you're even a little bit of an adventure, when you get to Paris, you can get a device that will be like the Skyrim. It'll be cheaper, that you'll just use in Europe. And you and your friends can split it three ways. That way you won't have too much expense. What I would recommend, there is a very good website that'll tell you about this. If you Google prepaid with data, it's a prepaid with data. It's a wiki that has that everybody who travels puts the information up there about how to solve this exact problem.
Got it.
And they will tell you what you can get in France that will work in all the countries you're going to visit, how much it'll cost. They will say this one's better than that one, all of that. So you're looking at, I think they call it mobile internet. What do they call it? You want why? It's like a MiFi. They call them MiFis, mobile hotspots. That's what you want. So you can read about mobile hotspots, and you can rent one there at the airport that you give back when you fly out of the. You're going to probably fly out of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you could give back then.
Okay.
Hey, you're going to have a great time. When do you leave?
July 23rd.
Soon. Are you excited? 1 month.
Very.
Oh, the best trip ever. And you know what? Dad, congratulations, Dad, because that's a brave thing to do. Like, put your daughter on a plane and say, bye-bye, have fun. I'll see you in a month. Ah!
Yeah.
I remember the first time I did that. Abby is quite the traveler. So the first time I did that, she was a junior in high school. She went to France for a year. Man, was I...
With school?
Yeah, she went to high school in France for a year. I was crying when she left.
Oh, wow.
I know.
I don't think I could do that.
No, don't. You break your father's heart. So are you going to college in the fall or what?
I actually just graduated from UCLA.
Oh, you graduated from college. Yeah, that's when
college.
That's when you're supposed to do the grand tour is after you graduate from college. Good for you. So you're coming back and getting a job is what you're doing.
Yeah. Hopefully in the medical field.
Nice. Do you want to go to medical school?
Physician assistant.
Very nice. Good.
Yeah.
Hey, have a wonderful trip.
Thank you. Thank you for all your help.
Oh, you're welcome. Have fun.
Thank you.
Bye, Sarah.
Bye.
Yeah, Abby went to Israel. Then she flew to Budapest. I think she's in Budapest right now. Then she goes to Prague. And then she comes home. She's with a friend, and I gave her my Skyrim. Thank you, Tony, for, I don't know why I couldn't remember that. I gave her my Skyrim, and I paid for a month of unlimited data. The Skyrim worked great. We went, we took it with us to Japan. It worked great, and we're going to take it. Our next trip, we go to 5 different European countries, including Morocco. So we're going to Spain, Portugal, Italy, France, Malta, and Morocco. And this will be an interesting test. And Monaco, 6. Monaco, it doesn't really matter because Monaco is literally only a square mile. But for some reason, Google Fi does not give you free service in Monaco. But you're practically in France, so it wasn't a big deal. The Tech Guy Podcast brought to you today by Texture. I love Texture. Texture is a great app for your iPad or your smartphone, Android or iOS. It's kind of like, best way to think of it, Netflix for magazines. You pay one low monthly fee, less than $10 a month, and you get more than 200 of the best magazines in the nation. Great reading. You don't have to go to the newsstand and pick up a stack of dead trees. You don't have to subscribe for huge amounts of money, and your coffee table doesn't have to buckle under the load. You got them all. Every page in every newsstand issue of every magazine, plus back issues, plus bonus features you can't get in print, like video. If you love photography, National Geographic and Shutterbug, the images there are so much better, frankly. On the screen, you can even zoom in and really pixel peep. It's great for that. It's great for reading some of the best journalism in the nation, in The New Yorker, in The Atlantic. I love reading the Gossips, the People magazine. It's always fun. This way, no embarrassment. You don't have to hide behind the grocery stand and catch up on what's going on with Gwen and Blake and all that. No, I can just read it in my Texture. Nobody will even know. I love Texture. Sports Illustrated. It's all in there. 300 years ago, when the magazine was invented, it was the latest in new technology. Fast forward to today, It's Texture. If you want to try it free, you can. A 7-day free trial awaits at texture.com/twit. Texture is the magazine app. Unlimited access to 200 of the best magazines all in one place. Complete issues, back issues, anytime, anywhere, all in one app. Stay connected to the biggest and best stories of the day with Texture. To start your 7-day free trial, go to texture.com/twit. And by the way, their curated sections are great because if you don't know what to read, they make suggestions by category just for you. It's a great way to keep up with the world. And by the way, great fiction, too. Let's not forget that. New Yorker has great stories. I'm a big fan. Texture.com/twit. Enjoy! Sandy, Lomita, California is next. Hi, Sandy.
Oh, hi. I'm trying to be able to watch my laptop on the television.
Watch the laptop on the television. Okay.
Or the computer, I guess.
Well, what is it that you want to watch on the television? Is it TV and video from your laptop?
To be able to watch YouTube.
Yeah.
Or sometimes I have access to European movies, yeah. European television, so I'd like to watch that on there because I don't want to sit in front of the laptop. It's small.
So there are a couple of ways to do that. Most laptops have, these days, an HDMI port, so you could just connect it directly to your TV. But that's the least easy.
Which I have done. I'm connected, and I can view everything on my laptop on the television. And I'm trying to, I have what's on here is Intel ProSet Wireless Tools. That's up on my TV screen. So I can run my computer on the television. I just cannot access the internet. It's really strange. I have, I think it's called AirPort as my router.
Yeah.
I have that. And then I have my modem, which is through AT&T. I have unplugged the router. Left it off for 10 seconds. I've also unplugged the modem and left that off for 10 seconds.
Well, hold on just a second. So you're saying that your laptop has internet just fine until you connect it to the TV and then it disappears?
Yeah. And then also I will take my laptop to the office to work, and that's wireless, and I can hook up there too. Or I have connection at work also. It's just not at home.
But it works at home in every other respect. Just as soon as you plug in that HDMI cable, it stops working.
Okay. When I have the laptop on the internet, I am hardwired then. I have my Ether.
So you don't use Wi-Fi on your laptop at home?
No, but I do have the tablet for Wi-Fi. And then if my daughter is here, I think she's
Okay. Slow down. So you're using an AirPort, an Apple AirPort, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's Wi-Fi. And your laptop has Wi-Fi, I'm sure. So you you don't need to connect via Ethernet to your laptop.
No.
So,
well, if it's on the television, but the Ethernet cable is not long enough.
No, but you don't need to eliminate the Ethernet cable entirely.
Okay.
And use your laptop's Wi-Fi to connect to your internet.
Yes. Now, how do I do that?
Same way you do it at the, do you do it at the office, or do you know you've never used Wi-Fi with your laptop?
No, just at the office. And then when I had trouble with that, I just had my office.
Have him set it up. So, what is it? It's an Apple laptop?
No, it's a Sony Vaio.
Okay. So on Windows, there is in the lower right hand corner. You know those little tiny icons down there? One of the icons is a network icon, a Wi-Fi icon. And unless that laptop... Well, no, I know you has Wi-Fi because you've used it at office. So what you need to do is click that little icon, and your AirPort, whatever its name is, should show up there. Now, I bet no one ever told you the password to your AirPort.
No, but I do have it. I asked my daughter, and I have been plugging that in.
Okay, you don't need it. You don't need to use Ethernet, is what I'm saying. Stop using Ethernet. Just start using Wi-Fi.
Right, that's what I would like to do.
Yeah, so that's a question of setting up the Sony to use the AirPort. And if you know the password and you know the name of the AirPort, it might just say AirPort. I don't know what it says. But if you know the name of the Wi-Fi access point, select it down there in the lower right-hand corner in that system tray. Make sure Wi-Fi is turned on. Sometimes on laptops, there's a button to turn off Wi-Fi, AirPort mode, airplane mode. Make sure it's not in airplane mode.
Okay.
You'll see all of that in the lower right-hand corner. If you click one of those little icons, there's a battery icon, there's a mixer icon, and There might be one that looks like it's got little sound waves coming out of a dot. That's the Wi-Fi icon.
Okay. I also have, they look like bars for the telephone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Click
those.
Okay. I've clicked that. And so then it wants me to enter the network security key, which I have.
Yeah.
That's what we were speaking of.
So you need to select the name of the airport, whatever that is. Your daughter may have named it airport, but it has a name. Your daughter should tell you what that name is. And then it'll say, okay, if you want to connect to that, you need to know the key. That's the password. That's all it is.
And that's what I've been doing.
And it won't join it.
No, and right now it just comes up. It says Windows was unable to connect to her network.
So that's the wrong password.
I asked her, and she said, no, that's it.
Well, she...
it's the same one I've used to do the tablet, too.
Oh. But it won't join it, huh? And
no.
So that's why you've been using the wired cable, the Ethernet cable.
Yes.
Did you say that you can't reach the Ethernet cable over to the TV? Is that the problem?
Right. That the Ethernet cable is only like 6 feet.
So that's why you lose internet when you connect to the TV. You're disconnecting the Ethernet cable.
That's right.
Well, that all makes sense now. Yeah. So you have a few choices. You can get a longer cable. You can figure out why you can't join the Wi-Fi, your daughter's Wi-Fi, and it may be you're not joining the right thing. Make sure you look at it on the tablet and see what the name is on the tablet, and you know, use that same password. It should work just like it does on the tablet on the Sony.
Yeah, this is why I'm just totally confused. And then I have other windows that I've opened up, a manual diagnostics tool.
No, you don't need to. It's not that complicated. You're making it more complicated. It's not that complicated. Make sure your caps lock key isn't on. Things like that.
Well, I just checked. No, it's not.
Type the password into a text window and then paste it in. Somehow, we got to make sure that it's the right password and it's the right access point. You got to choose the right access point. If that still doesn't work.
Yeah.
Then there is another way you can wirelessly connect to the TV. So this would be the easiest way, because then you could sit in the couch with your laptop on your lap and and broadcast to the TV whatever you want to see. Does your daughter, since she's got an airport, I wonder if she has an Apple TV. Does she happen to have an Apple TV?
No, she doesn't have an Apple TV. She just has a MacBook Pro.
All right.
She's not in the house here now. She's down in
San Diego. No, that's fine. So there are various ways. It depends on the TV. Sometimes TVs have built in the ability to stream to them wirelessly. Oh, but wait a minute. Never mind, because you're not on the Wi-Fi. Never mind. So even that is not going to work. We need to somehow, either you get a longer cable so that you can keep it plugged in.
I see.
Yeah, that's why you lost the internet. You unplugged the cable, right?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, well, I wish you'd told me that. It would have saved me. Oh, of course you lost the Wi-Fi. So what? The internet. So what you need, I think really what you want to do is get Wi-Fi working, because then everything will just work. You put the laptop next to the TV, you plug in the HDMI cable, and it'll work. So we want to get your Wi-Fi working on that Sony. We know Wi-Fi works on it because it works at your office.
Yes.
I guess the more complete way to do this would be to go into the network control panel.
Okay.
And I know this is not fun, but if you open the control panel, you can look go to the network and sharing center, and you can set up a new connection, and step by step go through this. Probably this is what your IT guy did. You want to get that Wi-Fi working, and since you're able to join the Wi-Fi with your tablet.
Yes.
And you have that password. There's something there. There's some simple thing that we're overlooking that just, you know, is a question of typing the right password, getting turning off the caps lock or the scroll lock key, or making sure you're joining the actual access point. It's probably not named airport, but who knows? It might be. But you should be able to get that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, but check, make sure you're using O's and zeros, not, you know, sometimes L's and 1's and O's and zeros can be confused. There's all sorts of oddball things. And maybe you could, at worst case, you get your daughter to change the password. I think the first thing you need to do is log in to the Wi-Fi. Then you'd have Wi-Fi. You wouldn't have to be connected to that silly Ethernet cable the whole time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, episode 1500, almost done. Last segment. We go on to the second 1500 next time. Back to the phones we go. Matt in Rochester, Minnesota. Hello, Matt.
Okay. Hey, Leo. How are you?
I am very well. How are you? Home of the Mayo Clinic, yeah, really? Right?
Home of the Mayo Clinic, you betcha, and big IBM campus down
That's
there.
Right. That's right, yeah. What can I do for you?
Really excited to talk to you.
Thank you.
First time caller here.
Welcome.
So excited. We're building a brand new house here, and I'm doing all the low voltage wiring. So all the Cat 5 I ran throughout the house.
Good man.
And just wondering, what's the best system that I can get? I know there's all these mesh networking systems out for wireless, but if I've got the ability to wire in, would something like the Eero or the Google Wi-Fi still work well to direct hardwire in as nodes to extend my signal out? Or
yeah, so I got a great solution for you. Eero's a sponsor, and I use Eero at home. I don't like Google's Wi-Fi solution. I don't think it's among the best mesh solutions. Mm-hmm. There is a solution, though, I also use this at home, that is really interesting for specifically your application. And it's called Plume, P-L-U-M-E. And what they sell is little, tiny little points that plug into the wall. But they all have an Ethernet port. And the reason they have an Ethernet port is exactly as you say, because you've got Ethernet in your room. You plug it into the Plume. You're still part of a larger mesh. So it's not like you have different access points in every room, but you have very localized 5G access in that room from your Ethernet into that Plume. So this is for your specific unusual situation, this is exactly the right way to do it. That way you make these little pools of Wi-Fi. This drawback is it might be a little more expensive because you're going to get a Plume for each room, right? But you're going to get superb Wi-Fi that way.
So is it doing the handover if you're walking around the house? You've got the iPad.
It's still a true
and
mesh
what's
system.
The coverage?
Well, it's whatever you give it.
On it really good. What about if you want to get the signal outside?
In that case, the Plume makes a larger. They just released this larger Plume. Got a big investment from Comcast. If you get Xfinity. Mm-hmm. The X-Fi that you get will be little Plume devices. They make a larger tri-band one now that would be probably the one you'd use for the outside access. The theory of Plume, and the reason I like it, is it is limited. They want to make a little pool of Wi-Fi. That reduces interference from the neighbors and everything else. So that's why you want one in every room. But if you want it outside, then get the newer Plume, the larger tri-band, and put that near the window or nearest wherever you're going to be outside.
Yeah.
And that'll be fine. I actually use the Plume network as my IoT network because I want to keep my Internet of Things devices separated from my home network. So my outdoor cameras, all of that stuff, all is on the Plume. But the beauty of that
is... Can you create separate networks with that, like a guest network or Internet of Things? Because I'm looking at getting like a Wi-Fi enabled lawnmower.
One of the things that Plume does that's really interesting is they have three levels of Wi-Fi built in. One of them gives you Internet access with no access to the rest of the network. Exactly what you're looking for security on Internet of Things. So it's of all of them, it's the most interesting in terms of that. It gives you I just closed it. I was going to show people who are watching the video that you can have an internet-only Wi-Fi connection that doesn't access. You can have a guest connection that has more capabilities, could access TVs and stuff. Yep. And then the home connection has all access, and that gives you full access to everything. So I'm a fan of this system. It's an interesting system. If you buy the pods, they call them pods. They're less expensive than, say, the Eero beacons, the extenders for the Eero. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the price is if you buy them in quantity. But remember, you'll have to buy more than you would with the Eero. With the Eero, each unit covers 1,500 square feet. So For outside access, the Euro is great, but if you have, but what the Euro doesn't support with these beacons is this idea of connecting the Ethernet in the in that room into it to give it the backhaul. And I love the idea. So Euro, Plumes will use your internet as a backhaul, but still be a unified network.
So do you have any opinion, like, on the ubiquity systems?
Well, that's, now, you're a geek.
Enterprise.
Yeah, you're a geek. You did your own wiring. Ubiquity, I don't like their consumer stuff very much. I don't think that their attempt to compete with Euro is very good. But the enterprise-grade stuff is marvelous. You know, but it requires some sophistication, not only to set up, but to maintain. They used to have a standalone Java app that you had to use. That has changed. They're a little bit better than they used to be. But they're like many enterprise solutions. They don't make any concessions to normal people. They expect you to be an IT professional. If you feel comfortable. Had,
it seemed like a pretty expensive system to go with the enterprise version.
It is. Yeah, it is.
And a lot of parts. It wasn't just buy the node.
No, you have to buy a base
three
unit.
Other with
yep.
It.
Yep. Ruckus is like that. That's what we use in our studios. Mm-hmm. I think Eero, really, the idea of Eero was to bring that kind of mesh home to the consumer with consumer interface, you know, an app and all of that stuff. You know, since then, Ubiquity's tried with their Amplify system, but I don't find the Amplify very good. The three I like the best, Eero is number one. That's what I use at home. Plume is great for your specific situation, making little pools of Wi-Fi to eliminate interference. And then for raw speed, nothing beats Netgear's Ubiquity. Netgear makes their own, and I've forgotten the name. It'll come to me in a second. But they have also a mesh system that I think is the speediest of them out there. Orbi, O-R-B-I.
Okay.
But that's maybe not ideal for what you want to do because Orbi uses fewer satellites. What you want to do, because you've got Ethernet drops in every room, is have something that can connect to the Ethernet.
Yep.
Plume's the only one I know of that does that.
Perfect.
Okay.
Leo, thanks so much.
Somebody's telling me that the Deco has a hard line backhaul as well. Now, I haven't tried the Deco mesh. That is, that's the...
Is that the name brand, or who makes that?
It's made by, is it Linksys? It's made by a big, well-known company. Let me look it up here, because I can't remember off the top of my head. And I haven't tried these yet. TP-Link does it. So TP-Link, I'm not surprised. They're also very geeky, and so they have a backhaul as well. That's what you're looking for, is a wired backhaul. That's what I would look for.
Sure. Thanks, Leo.
My pleasure. You're lucky. Anytime anybody's got hard wire in the walls, that's the best. Ethernet is fastest, less interference, no neighbors can, you know, it's more secure. All of that's the best. But it's not as convenient, frankly, as wireless. So I think kind of mixing the two together is kind of an interesting idea. A little hardwired, a little wireless. Our sponsors make it all free to you, including the website, techguylabs.com. No sign up there, no fee. But everything we talk about links to all of this. In fact, all of those solutions I just mentioned, the mesh wire Wi-Fi systems, all up there, techguylabs.com. And it goes all the way back 1,500 episodes. 1501 coming up next week. Thanks to Michael Cozio. He's been spinning the discs today, making some great music for us all, our musical director. Thanks also to Kim Schaffer for bringing you on the air, answering our phone calls. Most of all, thanks to you for being here. We're a great tech community, aren't we? Thank you for being part of it. And I'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.